This is photographer and popular photography magazine contributing editor Richard Burnaby, and you're listening to the Petapixel Photography Podcast with Sharky James. Enjoy.
This episode is sponsored by our friends at FreshBooks. Springtime means tax time, and their cloud-based accounting software helps freelance photographers and small business owners get their lives back and get back to shooting by making paperwork a breeze. To sign up for your 30-day free trial, go to freshbooks.com/petapixel and enter petapixel in the How Did You Hear About Us section. Thank you, FreshBooks, for your support. Welcome to the Petapixel Photography Podcast, episode 59. Google makes the Nik Collection free, but is it now dead? In this episode, search giant Google stuns photographers. A self-described photojournalist gets caught staging a photo in Belgium. A sports photographer and a shot put shot meet suddenly. Wartime photographers are highlighted. The Vivian Maier documentary hits Netflix. And Sunbounce extends an existing product. All that and more in episode 59 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. Thank you so much, Richard, for opening the show. I greatly appreciate it, brother. Richard Burnaby is an international landscape, wildlife, and travel photographer, author of quite a few books, and contributing editor over at Popular Photography Magazine. He's been a contributor to National Geographic, The New York Times, Outdoor Photographer Magazine, as well as many other publications, and he's a sought-after teacher and public speaker who loves to share his passion for photography. Richard is a busy guy, and if you follow him online, you can see it. He's been just about everywhere, it seems. As of this recording, he has over 205,000 followers on Twitter alone, and hey, you might just be one of them. I know I am. I love Richard's photography, and I think you will too. Hit the link in our show notes or visit him at richardburnaby.com. Burnaby is spelled B-E-R-N-A-B-E, by the way. And I'd like to thank you all for joining us here in episode 59 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. We appreciate you all so much, and thank you all for subscribing, rating, and reviewing us in iTunes or wherever else you listen to us. And as always, we greatly appreciate you telling your friends on social media and elsewhere and helping to get the word out about this show. Okay, with that, I'm your host, Sharky James. That's right. Let's hit it. Have you been eyeing the Nik Collection of photo editing software, but the thought of spending $150 for it rather than buying a new flash or saving towards some fancy glass just didn't appeal to you? Well, now you can have your cake and eat it too, because Google, who purchased Nik and its popular Snapseed photo editing software back in September of 2012, has announced that the Nik software suite is free. You heard that correctly. I could hardly believe it myself. Free. That's just amazing. You know, I thought it was a big deal when Google dropped the price from what had been a $500 suite of software when Nik owned it to just $150 a month later. And at that price, it made it a lot more attainable, and it was a sweet, sweet steal of a deal. But free is free. And that's crazy talk right there. You don't even have to give an email address. It's just available to download for free. This is not a drill, people. This is real. You know, Google, Apple, and other giants like that can do this, of course. It's chump change to them. So now they've unleashed on the world an amazing suite of software that will make users happy. And of course, they're going to want you to use Google Photos at some point. You see what they're doing here? There's always something behind what they're doing. But this was a big move for the search giant, if you think about it. They realize that people are taking more photos now than any other time in human history, and that is only going to increase. By making the Nik Collection free now, they are strengthening their position, and they definitely know what they're doing here. Of this, Google writes, quote, "Photo enthusiasts all over the world use the Nik Collection to get the best out of their images every day. As we continue to focus our long-term investments in building the incredible photo editing tools for mobile, including Google Photos and Snapseed, we've decided to make the Nik Collection desktop suite available for free so that now anyone can use it," end quote. It's a great set of tools, and I suspect that millions will now misuse them. Okay, I bet you didn't see that coming now, did you? Like HDR, people, of course, are going to go crazy with this and push out some ill-advised photos. But you know what? I'm teasing. I think this is a great move on Google's part, and I applaud them for this. This is a great software suite. I mean, people paid $500 for this not too long ago, and then $150, and now it is zero. Free. That is amazing. Tell everyone you know that this software is available. Seriously, it is that good. I think that everyone should at least give it a try and see how it goes, because there's so much that you can do with it. SilverFX Pro alone is worth paying for. You know, a simple conversion to black and white in Photoshop or Lightroom or whatever is weak compared to what this can do. So give it a try and you're going to see what I'm talking about. Your jaw actually might drop when you see how amazing your photography looks in black and white thanks to SilverFX Pro. And it's not going to cost you a darn thing. Then there's also ColorFX Pro, AnalogFX Pro for making your photos look like they did in the pre-digital age, Viveza, HDRFX Pro, Sharpener Pro, and DFine. DFine is one of those programs that helps you get rid of the grain in your photos. But you know what? For the most part, Lightroom does a great job at that. And you can download the entire collection right now at google.com/Nick Collection. Nick is N-I-K, by the way. Okay, so you might be wondering, what if you just bought it? Well, if you bought it sometime this year, that's 2016, you're going to be getting a full refund of your purchase price, they say. And that's going to be coming automatically. They're going to issue that soon. So that's awesome. On his Facebook page, photographer David Duchemin said this, quote, "Yesterday, Google announced that the complete Nik software bundle would now be free. It's been a long time since I used Nik SilverFX for my black and white conversions. So yesterday afternoon, when I was hoping to print some new work for my office walls, I decided to give it a go. And I have to admit that the detail and the tonality I got from a few simple tweaks in Nik impressed me," end quote. You know, I think that for many people, they're going to fall in love with black and white photos once they give SilverFX Pro a try. Seeing things in black and white is going to inspire many people, and I think that many will be getting prints made as a result now. Google goes on to say, quote, "We're excited to bring the powerful photo editing tools, once only used by professionals, to even more people now," end quote. There's a lot of really horrible software out there, and some of them are really heavy-handed, but the Nik Collection, however, is not one of them. It is really, really good stuff. Download it, give it a try, and I think you're really going to be pleased with the results you get from it. So I give mad props to Google. They did a really good thing for photographers here. So on behalf of photographers everywhere, thank you so much, Google. As of this recording, this story has been shared by over 33,000 people on Petapixel alone. So to say that people are excited about this would be a huge, huge understatement. Now, while this is great that we're getting the Nik Collection for free, I think it's kind of obvious that Google is releasing it out there because it doesn't plan to develop it anymore. So this is probably going to be the final version. We might not see updates to make it compatible with whatever systems come in the future. So enjoy it while you got it. And who knows what's going to come after this. But in the meantime, it's free. Next. I'm a former photojournalist, as you may know. And aside from adding and removing things in photos, another no-no in photojournalism is posing people. You see, you're there to be a fly on the wall and capture the scene as it is without your influence. That's part of the job, which is sometimes hard, as your mere presence is enough to change human behavior and thus the truth in your reportage. Directing a photo and passing it off as news just shouldn't be done, though. If a photo is staged, it's just that. It's no longer news. You are creating it. It's art direction, if anything. Even if it's shot at a legitimate news event, if your hand is involved in the creation of that photo, it's no longer something that is truth, and that is a problem. You're taking a real news story and injecting your own take on things and creating things that maybe wouldn't have happened otherwise. And in some circumstances, you can set off a chain of events that further influence a situation and could even lead to someone getting killed. And these things have actually happened before. You know, as a photojournalist, it's important to keep that in mind. Don't ever shape the news. It is just not a good idea. If you influence just one thing, a whole series of events can unfold that wouldn't have happened otherwise. And that's coming from you. That's not coming from outside of you. As a photojournalist, nothing should originate with you. I think you get the point here. Well, a self-proclaimed photojournalist by the name Khalid Al-Sabah, who says he's been in the press for 5 years now, was seen in the background of a television news report directing a young girl who was crouched down at a memorial to the victims of the Brussels terrorist attacks. On two separate occasions in just 24 seconds, the photographer is seen taking the girl's hand and literally placing it where he wants to on the ground, and then stepping back and taking the photo. Well, that is wrong on so many levels if you're passing yourself off as a photojournalist. It's just unacceptable. And thanks to photographer James Pomerantz, who was watching the Fox News broadcast from the scene of that memorial, we learned about this story. So not only was the supposed photojournalist staging the scene, he wasn't even aware that a TV crew was all of 10 feet away from him. Just because you call yourself a photojournalist doesn't make it so. A true photojournalist has their head on a swivel. They're constantly aware of what's going on around them to the extent that's possible, of course. It's how you reduce the chance of missing something important that should be photographed, and it's also how you watch out for any possible threats. This photographer was completely unaware and clearly didn't care. And yes, that rhymed. It seems like all that mattered to him was getting a better photo to post online, sell to a news outlet, or whatever, and that's just not photojournalism. I guess he got the message, though, because the photo of the girl that was on his Instagram account wasn't there very long before he pulled it. Hey, if you have to remove something, that's a sign, you know? Maybe photojournalism isn't for you. However, earlier this month, March 2016, Al-Sabah won $15,000 US in Dubai. It was for a first place award in the Hamdan International Photography Awards, a touching photo of a father holding his dead son in Palestine, a photo which was also published by National Geographic. We at Petapixel reached out to the photographer for comment, but as of this recording, he hasn't responded. He has, though, changed his bio on Instagram to read photographer rather than photojournalist, so that was nice of him to do. And he says that the photo at the center of this controversy was simply personal work rather than photojournalistic. Okay, so there's that. I guess you live and learn, right? The photographer who brought this to our attention, James Pomerantz, left a comment on one of Al-Sabah's Instagram photos, and it says, quote, "I posted the video yesterday knowing nothing about Khalid Al-Sabah, why he was staging a photo, or what he had intended to do with the resulting photographs. I still know next to nothing, not just about this, but about most things in life. But I would imagine that if he's not feeling pretty crappy about this at this point, he probably never will. Photojournalist or not, he's first and foremost a human being who it would seem made a mistake and has received some pretty intense public lashings for it. We could use more integrity in this world, not just in photojournalism. The same could be said for empathy and forgiveness." End quote. All right, I said crappy rather than the word he actually used there, as we're trying to maintain our clean rating here on the podcast, but you guys get the idea. And I agree with James. Who knows what Al-Sabah's intent was? You know, it's easy, though, to say it was for personal work rather than for a news outlet, but what if a magazine saw it and offered him money for that photo? Would he have mentioned that he staged it? I guess we'll never truly know, right? We've said it before here on the show, and I'll say it again. You really can't trust what you're shown these days. But that's not new. You know, since the early days of photojournalism, those who wanted to make a better photo and didn't care so much about ethics went ahead and staged things. It happens a lot, apparently. But with professional photojournalists becoming scarce by the day and news outlets relying on anyone with a camera and a working finger, it's just going to get worse, I think. Next. As we always say here on the podcast, thanks to the amazing technology available to us, sharing our photos is so easy. And so is running your business if you use FreshBooks. Whether you make your money with your photography or you have another small business, you'd rather be out shooting and editing your photos than dealing with paperwork, right? I know I would. Well, FreshBooks solves this problem, making it incredibly fast and easy. Their amazingly simple cloud-based invoicing solution keeps your cash flow details all in one place so you know who you've invoiced, who's paid, who hasn't, and what your income is. And the FreshBooks mobile app is awesome. It lets you take pictures of your receipts and organize them later so you have them ready to go come tax time. Do yourself a favor and check out FreshBooks. You know, they believe in this podcast and we want to support them, right? You'll be more prepared, less stressed, and you can get back to doing what we all love to do, taking photos and editing them. On average, FreshBooks users get paid nearly a week faster when accepting online payments through their system, cut 2 days a month out of administrative tasks, and double their revenue in the first 24 months. That is amazing. More time shooting means more time to make money rather than shuffling papers, and that's huge. Right now, FreshBooks is offering our listeners a free 30-day trial, so make sure you take advantage of that. Go to freshbooks.com/petapixel and enter petapixel in the how did you hear about us section. That's PETAPIXEL, of course. Thank you so much, FreshBooks, for your support. If you have Netflix, or what my mother calls Nextflix, for a reason we can't figure out, There's a fascinating documentary called Finding Vivian Maier that I think you'll really enjoy. If you're not familiar with the name Vivian Maier, here's what you need to know. Back in 2007, a 26-year-old real estate agent named John Maloof purchased a box for $380 at an estate sale, and that contained over 30,000 negatives. A later purchase brought his collection of the then-unknown street photographer up to 100,000 images. Can you imagine shooting 100,000 images on film, by the way? That is a lot of shooting back then. Now, what Maloof didn't know at the time is that this was the life's work of a reclusive nanny from Chicago's North Shore whose eye for composition and style has captured the world's attention, in part due to this documentary, but also due to the fact that she was really incredibly good. Vivian Maier died on April 21st, 2009, at the age of 83, with no idea how amazing her work really was, nor how famous she would become after her death, something that those who knew her best said she actually would have hated. Nonetheless, it's a very interesting documentary, so maybe check it out if you have Netflix. Sorry, Vivian, your work was amazing, and it has to be seen. It just has to. She was so good. Next. They're a little bit pricey, but when you want a really well-built, durable reflector, you get one from Sunbounce. Now, you might remember them as California Sunbounce, which I always found odd because they're a German company, but I digress. Well, now the company has announced its tight-fit screen, which adds another surface to the reflectors, thus allowing for more options should you own one of their reflectors now or plan to buy one. According to the company, the tight-fit screen is designed to be, quote, a cost-effective way to get more from your Sunmover. This new product fits like a second skin over the Sunmover Reflector Pro and offers multiple screen options without having to invest in the purchase of a second or third unit, end quote. Since it doesn't change the shape or tension of their reflectors, adding one of these helps bring more options to a shoot without taking up much extra space and saves a little bit of money, of course. Now, as we know, there are many 5-in-1 reflectors out there which are pretty cheap, like those from Neewer, N-E-E-W-E-R, however you pronounce it. But the ones from Sunbounce really are pretty darn awesome, I must say. They're incredibly well-built, and if you've ever seen fashion shoots on TV, in the movies, online, you're mostly going to see these. Unlike those other reflectors, which you change out by zippering around the reflector, these stretch over them, and that's pretty cool. If you're interested in a tight-fit screen, they're available in 3 models, Zigzag Silver, Zigzag Gold, and Black Hole. And they're available right now for $49 US, and that's nearly half the price of one of their Sunmover reflectors. They're pretty pricey, but these things are engineered to last. If you get one, you're going to have it for a long, long time. Next. As a former photojournalist who shot hundreds of sporting events over the years, I can tell you that one of the most dangerous things you can shoot is track and field. In fact, a number of years ago down in Utah, a photographer was impaled by a javelin as he photographed the event from a less than ideal position. An incident from which then on caused those in charge to restrict where photographers could shoot from. And that's something that I found out the hard way back in 2014 as I shot the Utah State Track Finals for the big paper down there that had me under contract. No one explained to me that photographers were only to shoot from within boxes that were spray painted on the grass at BYU's track facility, and I nearly got myself tossed on a couple of occasions that day. The first time it happened, I didn't know about the rule. And then a little while later, I forgot. I'm not used to having to shoot with those kind of restrictions. I'm going to blame it on the sun, though. It was a really hot day. That and I wasn't paying attention so much. If you've ever shot these events, you know that they're a 3-ring circus on steroids. There are literally multiple events going on all at the same time, and that's difficult enough to deal with. Then you throw in nearly 100-degree temps, the pressure of being on deadline, and needing to photograph specific area teams and athletes, get all that information correct for your captions later, and you can see how you might forget to shoot in a little box that you're not used to shooting from. When I worked for the newspaper back in Arizona, I didn't have that kind of restriction. I could pretty much go wherever I wanted to, and they were happy to see me there. But this time, no, not so much. Must have been a liability thing for insurance or something. They had everyone corralled into these boxes, which weren't very big, spray painted on the ground. And if you stepped outside of that, watch out, because you were warned. They had people watching for this stuff. But you know what? It's there for safety. And hey, I'm not a big fan of needles, let alone an 8-foot javelin piercing me. So I'm okay with that. And the same goes for discus and shot put. You don't want any part of your body suddenly meeting those. Not good. Well, for a photographer shooting the 2016 IAAF World Indoor Track and Field Championship in Portland, Oregon, it was the shot put that got him. Shot putter Kendall Williams hurled her 8.8-pound shot a bit too far to the side, and it struck the photographer who was down on one knee shooting. He managed to get up and walk it off, but I tell you, that's going to leave a mark for quite a while. Thankfully, it didn't break any bones or his gear, of course, but it very well could have. You know, those things are 8.8 pounds, like I said, and they're coming at you quite quickly. If you ever get a chance to shoot a track and field event, even at the high school level, it's important to be super careful and be aware of your surroundings at all times, to the extent that you can, of course. There's a lot going on. You know, we have our eyes to the viewfinder, right? And we're often getting lost, for lack of a better term, as we're concentrating on what we're shooting. But with track and field, that can go south quickly. For new shooters at these events, I always recommend looking for other photographers and making friends right away. Ask for some advice, and often they'll invite you to tag along with them and learn the ropes. So if you can, take advantage of that for sure. But still, you gotta pay attention and keep yourself safe, because only you are responsible for that. And don't even think about putting your eye to the viewfinder before you determine if you're in a safe zone or not, because that can really, really end badly. For this guy, he was in an acceptable, albeit kind of risky place to be shooting from, and without being on your feet, you're just not going to get out of the way quickly enough. So it's the risk you take when you shoot these things. No one thinks they're going to get hit, but it's going to happen at some point. Trust me on this. I've been hit so many times. Same thing with football. You will eventually get knocked over. It's going to happen. I'd recommend shooting with the longest lens that you have. Try to get as far away as you can, at least at your very first event of this type. Best case scenario, you get out of the way and you don't get hurt. If you don't, that's going to be very painful. And if it hits your gear, especially if you don't have insurance, that is not going to be a very fun day at all, is it? Nope. Next. Being a soldier in wartime is hard enough as it is. People are literally trying to kill you. Okay, your side is also trying to kill them as well, but you guys get the idea here. It's not at all easy. It's got to be an incredible amount of stress, more stress than most of us have ever been under before. Even harder, I think, would be being a soldier who is also a photographer. So rather than a gun in your hand, you've got camera gear on you as well. It's an incredibly vulnerable position to be in. I mean, I can't even imagine, but it's an important job and one comparatively few have had. Recently, a three-minute segment was aired on CBS this morning about the incredibly brave soldiers of the Department of Army's Special Photographic Office, or DASPO. Authorized in 1962 by U.S. President John F. Kennedy, this special segment of the Army sent over 200 soldier photographers to the Vietnam War, and amazingly, only two of them were killed in action. As the video explains, helmets were often not worn as they got in the way, thus making these soldiers even more vulnerable. Now, in war, of course, you shoot at those with a gun rather than with cameras, ideally. So in some ways, maybe it was actually safer to be perceived as not being a threat. So being a photographer in war might actually be safer. But then you're always going to have soldiers on the other side that think, well, there's a person from the other side. I'm going to shoot and kill them, even though they have a camera and they can't kill me. There's always stupid people, right? And it's the stupid ones you need to worry about. The smart ones, they might be like, you know what? He's got a camera. I'll spare him. If you happen to live near my birthplace of Chicago, or you're planning a trip there, maybe head on over to the Pritzker Military Museum, where you can view a collection of their photos now on display, which honor these soldier photographers. The museum writes, quote, "Armed with their cameras, sound equipment, and light weaponry, the elite photographers and cameramen of DASPO captured in stark detail the true horrors and humanity of the Vietnam War. Deploying on the front lines aboard Hueys and Air Force C-130s, these special operations teams operated with unlimited access, producing some of the most iconic and important images from the conflict." End quote. Now, as we know from our good friend Frederick Van Johnson, whom you may know as the host of This Week in Photo, also known as TWIP, these photographers not only had to carry their normal gear as a soldier, but two cameras and a complement of film and other equipment as well. A whole lot of stuff in addition to your normal complement of things as a soldier. And Frederick would know this because he was a soldier photographer in the United States Air Force. So we thank you so much, Frederick, for your service. To see the video and learn more about these brave soldiers, head on over to the show notes for episode 59 at petapixel.com/podcast. It's just a 3-minute video. It's really interesting, and I think you'll enjoy it. I'd like to thank you for listening to episode 59 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. Don't forget to check us out at petapixel.com/podcast for the show notes and to see what else we have for you. If you head on over there, you can leave us a voicemail question that we can answer here on the show. Or if you don't feel comfortable leaving a voicemail, go ahead and email me at lensshark@gmail.com. And if you'd like to connect with me personally, and I hope you do, hit me up on Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook, where I'm Lensshark. That's LENSSHARK. And don't forget, you can help this show by supporting our sponsor, FreshBooks. So head on over to freshbooks.com/petapixel, enter petapixel into the How Did You Hear About Us section, and claim your 30-day free trial. Thanks again, FreshBooks. All right, with that, I'll see you all in episode 60. Well, it's f8 and 250th of a second outside. It's time to shoot.
Please subscribe to the Petapixel Photography Podcast. My daddy is the host.